What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org. Also available as a podcast if you're too lazy to listen on Friday afternoons. You can listen to it on Mondays. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Ryan is working the board. Melissa's working behind Ryan to make sure he's working. It's fine. It's all good. Joe Shearer and Christopher Lloyd from the Film Yap are sitting in with me today. Hello, gents.
Hello. Good to be back.
Howdy.
Good to have you. And lots to talk about besides what's new in theaters, what's new on DVD. A monumental day week, I should say, in my DVD world. And a couple of obits. One that's a show and the other's of a person and ideas. So, gentlemen, we'll work with, what should we start with? The 3D animated feature, the gimmicky title, or the erotic thriller?
A Hot Tub Time Machine being the erotic thriller, right?
Not with those guys. Yes, the 2010 version of Snakes on a Plane is out. It's called Hot Tub Time Machine. It's John Cusack and the three other guys who, well, they do the title of the movie, really. So let's give a listen to the trailer, s'il vous plaît.
Road trip weekend consists of partying, hooking up, and going wild. But in 2010, four friends will discover a new level of awesome.
Go. Aye.
Look, what are we going to do? You guys are terrible at quarters. Let's break into a school or steal a cop car or something, huh? Hit Ritalin? What?
Guys, come look at this. You don't think it's a little weird, a bunch of guys just piling up in a big bathtub together?
It's called male bonding, okay? Haven't you even seen Wild Hogs?
Watch out, here I come.
What the hell happened last night?
Is there some kind of retro thing going on this weekend?
Something's going on with you.
Dude is rocking cassette player.
Landformers.
I'm sure there's a good explanation for all this.
Jerry girl!
Excuse me, miss. What color is Michael Jackson?
Black.
Winterfest 86!
I don't understand how we back in time!
I'm so scared.
Must be some kind of hot tub time machine.
This March.
This is a very special model that you have here.
You know exactly what's going on here, don't you, old man?
Come on, it's the 80s. Let's do what we want. Free love.
Hey, let's get this party started.
Mom?
Forget the present.
Why did I ever break up with him? What was I thinking?
Wow.
And now the universe is giving me another shot.
This is going to be the best weekend, like, ever.
I feel pregnant.
Change the future.
There's money to be made here, man. We could invent iPods, Prius, Max.com, short rims. We could combine Viagra with Twitter.
What?
Twitagora. Boom!
And kick some past.
You're breaking up with me?
That's not how this happens.
Do you know what happens to you?
I mean, you get fat. I mean, like, fat.
Oh! Hot Tub Time Machine.
Could I text you later?
Wait, what?
Are you online at all?
I have no idea what you're saying.
How do I get a hold of you?
Come find me.
That just sounds exhausting.
All right, I guess there aren't real high expectations for for this picture, I assume. My only question is it more than just let's make fun of the 80s?
I would say so.
Okay.
I haven't checked, like, Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, but I think the reviews that are becoming them are actually pretty good overall. It's not this year's Snakes on a Plane because it's actually pretty funny.
Well, I don't think Snakes was intended to be funny, but that was an example of a forced cult film that kind of blew up in its face.
Yeah, so. It was way overhyped, whereas this movie was not. So
okay, that helps.
Fewer expectations, but I don't know if it's so much poking fun at the 80s. It's definitely poking fun at 80s movies. The conventions of them, the clothes, the hair. I mean, stuff that was almost self-mockery back in the time. If you look at the basic setup of this movie, the setting, they're all at this ski lodge with a bunch of randy, teenagers and college-age people getting drunk and chugging beer and topless antics. It's basically Hot Dog the movie.
So we're making fun of Hot Dog as opposed to, and I want to make sure I don't get her angry, the late John Hughes' work.
No.
Okay, so it's more of the, I get growled at. But it's more, the kind of lowbrow sub-Porkies.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so it's that. So it makes fun of those as opposed to the decade itself.
Yeah, and so, obviously the in-joke of having a couple of 80s film icons in there of John Cusack and Crispin Glover, both with prominent roles. Obviously.
And didn't somebody lift up a rock and found Chevy Chase?
Yes.
I know he's got a series and it's doing fine.
He has a really weird role as the hot tub repairman who just sort of shows up and it seems confused and mumbles strange things and then he disappears. He's like, Mr. Miyagi meets the Bill Murray character from Caddyshack.
But wait a minute, Chevy Chase is not playing a snarky douchebag? I think that's a stretch, then.
It's a pretty interesting setup. It's not as clever, a setup for a raunch comedy as The Hangover was. But, it's basically the idea is they get in this hot tub at their old stomping grounds and they go back in time, but they're not actually themselves. They're occupying their former bodies when they were 19 years old.
Let me guess. So there's the big look in the mirror and screaming.
Right. And so when they look at you, and I thought for sure they would, do a cut, some kind of a ghosting thing, some imagery from Cusack from, what's one of his movies from back?
16 Candles. 16 or Candles. Say Anything.
Say Anything.
Well, probably a different studio.
But no, they actually hired some skinny young actor who actually doesn't really look like him at all.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Come on, studio. Stick a crowbar in your wallet and let them do just an image, I guess.
Yeah.
So, now I know there's how raunchy does this thing get? Because I know there's a Red Band trailer, which of course that means.
Well,
ooh.
I mean you could. I mean, a Red Band trailer just means that it has some curse words in it.
Okay.
I mean, you could make a Red Band trailer of a PG-rated movie, but maybe not quite. But,
well, I would say, why would you really?
Very mild R, probably not much hard. It's probably more for language than anything.
Okay.
Lots of drugs.
Not in the 80s, no.
Oh, in this version, it is Coca-Rama. Everyone's really excited about chugging beer and doing coke.
Ah, I see. That's always a good combination. And now, as far as the time machine, is there any homage to Back to the Future?
No.
No, just kind of accepting the concept for what it is?
No. My favorite part of the movie is actually that you had the evil preppy hoods, who are ganging up on the lovable losers. Why is it in all these movies that the preppies are always the bad guys? I don't know about you, but I remember the 80s, and the preppies were not really – they didn't actually – overlap with the jocks who are actually beating people up.
You have a point there. And I think South Park already did this episode, except they took out the timeshare angle. But yeah, that happens, I guess. I don't know. If you get detention together, you can live together in harmony and have a Coke. Sorry. So I guess, yes, definitely. Goes. Would you see it? He's saying yes, but I say you definitely see it in the afternoon. Would you see it in the evening?
I'd pay $9 for it.
You would?
Yeah.
Wow. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Lloyd says go see it for $9, unless you live in a bigger city and you're on your own.
Actually, I think it's $9.50 now.
Is it $9.50?
Yeah.
See, we're not exactly sure because we get to go for free a lot. Sorry. Hey, we have few perks. We have to get them whenever we can. All right, so I guess let's move on to the 3D. Now, they wouldn't shoot this in 3D, would they? Are there 3D possibilities
for Hot Tub Time Machine? Well, there are. There's actually more bottomless shots of guys than topless shots of girls, unless you really wanted to do some kind of strange 3D effect there. I don't
unless
think you'd really
Liam
want
Unless Liam Neeson
to.
Or Sacha Baron Cohen are in, I guess there really is no need. So. Yeah. All right, let's move on to How to Train Your Dragon, which is, now did you see it in 2D or 3D, sir?
We did see it in 3D.
Good man.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
Man. It's worth the extra couple bucks.
Yeah.
I guess the first question on this is, you know, how much of it is, now as a film watcher, how much of the 3D is really obvious and how much of it feels tagged on?
There's really just a couple of, much like Monsters vs. Aliens, there's a couple of really showy things at the very beginning, and then it almost drops off completely, and it's strictly kind of textural stuff after that. It's just to kind of add to the ambiance rather than, you know, show off this marvelous technology that, you know, 8 million films have shown off in the past year or so.
Oh, but, you know, everything's going to be in shot in 3D now.
Yeah.
And I heard, it was James Cameron who's making fun of some of the films that were shot in 2D and now they're adding mm-hmm. 3D on. Apparently he forgot he's doing that with Titanic. Just a thought. So, Boy and His Dragon.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
basically it.
That's pretty much it. You know, it's,
we have a dragon mom. Can we keep him?
Yeah, there's a lot of daddy issues thrown in for good measure between.
Oh, great.
Yeah, between Hiccup is his name. Jay Baruchel plays Hiccup, who's the black sheep Viking, the weakling smart Viking that invents things.
Okay, now just before you, I'm sorry, we have to, because this one of the things we try to do at Film Sociology is to try to move actors from that guy status
yeah.
and that girl status to actually remember their names. Now, Jay was, I know, just in She's Out of My League, which
uh-huh.
we're over the age of 20, so we have no reason to see that.
Yep. I did see that.
You did see that?
Yes.
Boy, you must have been really old. Were you?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit, but, you know, it was harmless enough. It was in that vein of Knocked Up and, you know, kind of the second tier Knocked Up.
Okay, group. And he's sort of he's like the, in the chess set, he's in the pawns of the
yeah.
Judd Apatow umbrella,
mm-hmm.
if you were to make it, or the Rat Pat chess set.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Knocked Up. We were talking earlier, I always remember him as the spaz boxer, skinny guy from Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah, he was really good in that.
He was really good in that. And he had that short-lived drama series with Don Johnson called Barely Legal. Don't ask me why I know that, but and then you saw him, you remember him from
TV show Undeclared, which is an early Judd Apatow effort, had Seth Rogen in it, and I think a bunch of his young crew were in that.
Okay, so we're safe to say that he's the Henry Silva, I guess, of the Judd Apatow. Henry Silva was a character actor from the 50s and 60s, never mind. Played anything. It's one of those.
Yeah.
So
anyway, he's the inventor of the Vikings, who, of course, favor killing things with big, blunt instruments as much as possible.
And Brett Favre.
Yes, absolutely. So he, you know, killing dragons is what these people do. This is all they do, pretty much. They kill dragons and they eat. And he wants to show them he can kill dragons with his big, fancy machinery. And he actually wounds one and goes and finds that it's not really the big, bad thing he thought it was. Becomes his pet. They become friends.
It has the voice of Sean Connery.
It does not have the voice of Sean Connery.
Oh,
no.
Wrong movie. Sorry. That's all right.
No. This fares a little better than that one, I think. But there's this weird little thing he does because the dragon's tail, it's one of the wings on its tail is damaged. It can't fly.
Uh-huh.
So he invents a kind of prosthesis that he can control via a saddle and kind of foot pedals. So he can help it fly together. They fly, they bond. And
they believe they can fly.
Yes. You know, you have the great shots from there where they, you know, they fly around and there's the wee moments they actually.
You mean the exclamation of fun or video game?
the exclamation of fun.
I'm afraid we're going to have to make that different.
There's a pause, yes, while Hiccup plays Super Mario Brothers for a while.
Don't give any ideas, man. They probably will. Yeah. I think I read like Craig Ferguson's a voice in this as well. Who mm-hmm. who else is?
Gerard Butler plays.
A good film with Gerard Butler.
Yeah, go for it.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, and there was someone who I absolutely swore was Jason Lee. It turns out to be T.J. Miller, who was also in She's Out of My League with with Jay Baruchel. So
I see. Yeah.
Craig Ferguson does a voice of the town blacksmith who has lost his leg and hand, but his hand is like interchangeable, so he can like put different tools and weapons
it's
on
Mr.
there.
Mr. Han from Enter the Dragon.
An interesting choice. America Ferrara does the female lead of the love interest slash competitive warrior. For the Jay Baruchel character.
Interesting.
And yeah. she's and I was trying to place her during the movie, couldn't do it. She was really good.
Yeah. Okay.
Kristen Wiig also was one of the
another one off the bench.
Yeah, and Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill has that part, yeah.
Come off the bench, hit a couple threes, sit down.
Yep.
That's fine.
Absolutely.
So, are you going to have to go see it? Forget what did your spawn think of the film?
I took the two oldest Riley's my 5-year-old, Jenna's 2. They both sat enwrapped the entire time.
You took a 2-year-old to the movie?
I took them solo, me and the two of them, which could be a dicey proposition, but it turned out very well. They
okay,
all right.
Whew,
thoroughly.
Boy, you broke my record.
Yeah.
I was like, man.
It is not the great Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs
you had a bad
debacle of 2009.
Yeah.
So. Oh, no. How long did you last?
I lasted until the big finale of the film, at which point Jenna stood up and promptly fell back through the seat of the the movie theater folding seat. Yeah.
Oh dear!
Yeah, blood curdling scream followed very promptly. So,
although you did say that your daughter took her 3D glasses off at some point during the movie,
yeah, and she dropped them. So
that's gonna happen.
Yeah, so, you know.
Okay,
fine.
But that's not a bad track record so far.
No,
because we've seen the real bad track records.
Yep.
So, all right. So, I guess the question is, are you going to have to see this again?
I could probably hold them off until the video release, but at that point, I'll probably see it about 50 more times because they did both like it a lot, and they do talk about it quite a bit now. So you never know. Maybe an encore is on the table. So
okay, 2 for 2. All right, let's move on. The erotic thriller Chloe from director Adam McGoyan. Famed Canadian director of Where the Truth Lies, Sweet Hereafter, and many, many more. I don't know if you've ever imagined a movie with Liam Neeson, Amanda Seyfried, and Julianne Moore, but I have, and I don't think it's quite like this. Or it's like that. Play it.
Did you find that waitress sexy?
Which one?
The one you were flirting with.
Oh, come on. I was being friendly.
Yes, but a single woman. I think my husband would like you.
What's your name?
It's Chloe. My husband's cheating on me. At least I think he is. I want you to see him.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Can I borrow your sugar?
Sure.
I want to find out.
Thank you.
See what he does if you present yourself to him.
I said to him that we should go to Allen Gardens. And then he said he could not kiss me because he's married. We walked through these exotic flowers. And then
I didn't ask you to do that.
He asked me if he could kiss me.
She's in my house all night and nobody tells me? Business transaction, which is what this was, is over.
Now, we have two different aspects going on here. We have the films of Adam McGoyan, who I admire a great deal, and then we have this erotic thriller with Amanda Seyfried apparently doing things with both of them. So now I'm wondering, because it's Adam McGoyan, it's got to be more than – it's not Adam McGoyan doing a Skinamax thriller, right? It's got to be a little more depth to it. What do you think?
There's a little more. I wouldn't call it an exceptionally deep movie, but I would call it a well-executed movie. And with Amanda in a role, you know, she's been known for Dear John and Mamma Mia, very wholesome apple pie roles.
I was one of the nine that saw Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, yeah, and there she played straight woman
to
Megan Fox.
And, of course, Big Love, continuing your trend.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say is this movie is a real career changer for her because her screen heat quotient, she is blowing Megan Fox out of the water.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Now, you know, Adam O'Gwynn, he's had some issues with getting his films R ratings from the MPAA before.
Oh, yeah. Where the truth lies, there's fame stories behind that.
I think Exotica back in
Exotica
the day.
Exotica 1, yeah, that's right. And by the way, it's a film, it does have stripping in it, but it's not about strippers.
Right. Yeah, there's some stuff in here without pumping it up too much that, yeah, I think the MPAA probably took a good hard look at.
Unrated DVD.
And not to give too much away, but hotter action with Julianne Moore than with Liam Neeson.
Yes! And trust me, I love Liam Neeson. I think Paul Rudnick once referred to Liam Neeson as actually Gaelic for a really good time.
I was going to say, Matt, that is the movie I'd imagine with the three of them in it.
Actually, yeah. Well, and I also had the rule where Julianne Moore could only do films where she's doing monologues without pants.
Yeah.
To that I say thank you, Robert Altman.
The film does have a couple of minor drawbacks. One is that there's an element of the plot. You know, it is essentially
a plot with this three thing going?
No, there is a potboiler thriller aspect to it. And there is, obviously I won't give it away, but sharper audience members I think will have guessed it and seen it coming a long way off. And the other thing is the basic setup is you have to get over the hump of believing that the whole idea is that Liam Neeson doesn't find, or any man doesn't find Julianne Moore attractive.
Yeah, I now have some issues with that. It's like
because she's such a hag.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's got a 4 in her age.
Almost a 5. I think she's almost
really?
50 this
she
year.
She is approaching 50. Yep.
Wow. She'll be part of the Bill Simmons Diane Lane All-Stars vertical.
Absolutely. Yeah, aging very gracefully.
That's great.
So the basic setup is that she and her husband are, you know, well-to-do middle-aged folks with a marriage that's gone south, and she thinks her husband is cheating, so she hires the prostitute, played by Amanda, to tempt her husband.
And things just get out of hand.
Right, and then...
But not in a Dear Penthouse sense of the word. Or does it?
Yeah. Well, the Chloe character is not just, a streetwalker. She's very intelligent, and she doesn't just use her body. She uses her mind to, as she puts it, find something about all of her clients to fall in love with. And, unfortunately, she finds quite a lot about Julianne Moore's character to fall in love with.
Well, well, well. There you go, folks. So, would you pay $10 for this?
Definitely. It's a good movie.
Cool. All right. Wow, there you go. I got to get that out of my head. all right, so there we go. 3 for 3. Not bad. I don't think we've batted 1,000 in a while.
It's a good week for movies, although we can't tell you about Greenberg.
They didn't show it to us. And that's a shame because I think we all universally like Squid and the Whale, and actually liked Margot at the Wedding.
Yeah, or at least I found things about it to like and admire.
Okay. So, we had an opportunity to see Ben Stiller actually act and be directed by a director, and I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, really disappointing, because that's the sort of movie that usually they're trying to,
trying to push.
They're trying to enlist our aid.
Ben Stiller got profiled on CBS Sunday Morning. That's a deal for him, so. All right, well, we'll see. Of course, whatever films you have seen, folks, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org or Facebook. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to get into the DVDs, a monumental DVD release, and I'm going to pull one of Joe Shearer's quotes so we can say it on the show. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
As it sounds. I say fooey to those who say there's nothing to do in Indianapolis, and we bring it to you on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast every week. It's a feature of our top 10 shows as voted on by music journalists across the city and our on-track artist featuring a local recording each and every week right here on the IndianapolisMusic.net podcast and WFYI HD2 Thursdays at 4 p.m.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point. And WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Joe and Chris from the Film Yap are here. Video store. They're starting to dwindle as they keep closing up. I know to give you guys a tip, there is a certain chain store at 96th Street. They are in the 10 to 30% off stage of their inventory. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for stuff for your collection, might want to go over there and take a look. Well, gentlemen, every year my colleague at Nouveau, by the way, happy 20th Nouveau, at Johnson Ott and I, at least once a year, we always have this list. There are two lists that we have. There are films that need to be on DVD and then films that deserve the special edition treatment, and obviously various lengths. And my number one pick for what needs to be on DVD is finally over. The African Queen is finally on DVD and Blu-ray. As I thought I read, the last of the AFI Top 100.
Wow.
Now out on DVD. So, and I'm still trying to do research as to why it took so damn long. And Fox isn't saying anything.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was restored. The film went through a restoration quite some time ago.
Yeah. And, man, and I watched it. I bought it on Blu-ray, and it's worth it. Oh, my gosh. It's hard to believe 60 years.
Yeah, and I believe they're going to be doing a theatrical release again this year.
I hope so. That's and, yes, I'll take my shoe off and bang it on the thing like Khrushchev. Go see it in the theater. Anytime you get to see anything, I don't care if it's the IMA or if it's an IMAX theater, seeing it on the big screen, no matter how ridiculous the other members of the audience can be, is always worth it. And it was just fun watching The African Queen. I got the kids' film critic interested in seeing The African Queen now. Heaven knows why, but it's okay.
Cool.
You know, great performances by Katherine Hepburn. Humphrey Bogart got the Oscar for this. John Huston wanted to shoot an elephant, but he wound up drinking and not getting dysentery. As did Bogart. They were the only two apparently on the set that didn't get sick because of all the booze they drank. So take that, health codes. But no, great film. Definitely go see it. Definitely purchase it, add it to your collection. And now Black Belt Jones is my number one film that needs to be on DVD. I'm ready to do the commentary for that one as well. It's brilliant. We're going to play a trailer from a film that we all you know what? All of us go to press screenings quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go and sometimes we talk about the films and sometimes we don't because we want to save our goodies. And I remember the press screening for this, that we all kind of hung out in the theater and just kind of basked in the film glow. It was that much fun. It's Fantastic Mr. Fox. Here's the trailer.
And so it begins.
Welcome to the fantastic world of Mr. Fox.
Woo!
Should we dance?
Woo!
His life is fantastic.
Pure wild animal craziness.
His wife is fantastic.
If what I think is happening, it better not be.
His neighbors, not so fantastic.
This is Bogus, Bunce, and Bean, three of the meanest, nastiest, ugliest farmers in his valley.
What was that?
They're digging us up.
But they're about to discover...
Oh, Foxy. Is help on the way?
He's one fox.
I've got an idea.
You can't out-fox.
Mole, what do you got?
I can see in the dark.
We can use that.
Rabbit, I'm fast.
Badger,
demolitions expert.
What? Since when? Here, put these bandit hats on.
I don't have a bandit hat, but I modified this tube sock.
They look good.
Yeah, we do.
The only security is an old hunting beagle. Laced some blueberries with sleeping powder. Beagles love blueberries.
titanium card.
What's this thing you do, the whistle with the clicking sound?
That's my trademark.
We're different. We all are. Him especially. But there's something kind of fantastic about that, isn't there?
I can fight my own fight.
No, you can't.
I guess we should start doing something, right?
Let's see some hustle.
Yeah! Woo!
This fall, forget Super.
That was close, Rat. Be careful.
Oh, I'm as careful as I...
Ignore Incredible.
I can fit through there. You want to know why? Why? Because I'm little.
It's all about Fantastic.
You really are fantastic.
I try.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
What's this lightning bolt?
This fence might be electric.
Well, I just hope it doesn't mean thunder, because I have a phobia of that.
Yes, the Wes Anderson film for the whole family.
Yep.
So I just remember how much fun it was watching this, and the fact that, you know, yes, it was nominated for animated feature. Some of us here feel it should have got it. And screenplay? Did it get the?
Oh, did it get nominated? No.
It should have. It really should have.
Definitely.
Taking the Roald Dahl short story and making it into a Wes Anderson film was a lot of fun. Guys, your thoughts?
Just a wonderful, wonderful movie. Such a strange combination of, you know, stop-motion animation and the filmmaker's quirky sensibilities and all this great voice acting. George Clooney, Meryl Streep, which I watched the movie, and I was like, who is that? It was Meryl Streep.
Yep.
And Jason Schwartzman, I thought he was just terrific as the sort of the kid with a chip on his shoulder.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I've said a lot about the movie on this show and in other places, and I actually read the story to my kids.
Really?
I had not ever read the story. I actually went and bought a copy of it, and what Wes Anderson did to that story was amazing. He took it's just the grain of the story is what he takes of. You know, the fox versus the farmers, which is pretty much all the book is, the fox versus the farmers. He has several kids in the book. His wife loves him the entire film. His kids adore him the whole film. And what he did with this was just incredible, I thought.
Adding a little more dynamic to it.
Yes.
What I wasn't expecting, of course, was it's the one more heist kind of storyline that, that happens, especially in the middle part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very funny, enjoyable. And, of course, my favorite line is, you're disloyal. It's just a good summation of anything in that. But it was just being able to take a Wes Anderson film. And I know people are either, I think, real love and hate with Anderson's work. But I was curious, especially after Darjeeling, what he was going to do next to get that style of filmmaking in. Well, he made a stop motion, and fully for him. So actually, we had stop motion animation and hand drawn animation nominated in the animated features this year. Mm-hmm. So, I still think 2009 is going to go down as probably one of the best years of animation of all time.
Coraline as well in there.
Exactly, yeah. Coraline and all the others that we talked about that got in there. Now, it's been a while since this person's been in here, and she wanted to get in her two cents about Fantastic Mr. Fox, and she's going to do this for me, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Kids film correspondent of film sociology, Emma Sosi. How are you, dear?
Good.
Now, this is your second, third time seeing Mr. Fox. You saw it once in the theater or twice?
Once. So this is my second time.
Second time. So what do you remember most about Mr. Fox?
Well, that he's been he wants everyone to think of him as Fantastic Mr. Fox, because he went in some parts and most parts of a lot of people's bodies, they want to be able to sort of be paid attention to a little, so be sort of like they're a hero a little bit.
Right. So, and Mr. Fox wants to be everyone's hero.
Yes.
Okay. What do you remember most? What do you think is the part that you remember that you liked that was really funny?
Well, the funniest part in that movie, I think, is when they're having, like, the whack bat. Because, like, it's so hard to listen because he's just saying so quick. episode. It was just funny.
Well, in on Fresh Air, which you can hear next after Film Sociology, Terry interviews Wes Anderson, and she's made the summation of those who don't follow sports, that's exactly what every sport sounds like when you're trying to describe it. I hadn't thought of that. That's actually really kind of dead on.
I have no idea. What you are talking about.
See, just like this show. So, is there any other parts that you really liked?
Well, the two other parts that I really like are when Mr. Fox, a.k.a. Foxy, and his lawyer are fighting.
Are you cussing at me?
No, are you cussing at me? And then they just start being savage animals.
So, now, we bought this on Blu-ray. What is the bonus if you have a Blu-ray player? I sound like I don't have an endorsement deal. But if you get the Blu-ray sometimes, what else do you get, Emma? Which is why you're really happy.
A DVD copy.
Which goes where?
In my room.
Yeah.
Because I have a DVD player.
We know. You got to work on that underwriting. Well, Emma, thank you. I know you'll be watching Fantastic Mr. Fox many times over. So, all right. Thank you, love. So, yeah, although she can't dramatically storm out the door because the door is real heavy. So, thank you, sweetie.
That is true.
Oh, my gosh. You guys get her once every few weeks. Yeah, Meryl Streep's her favorite actress now, and the only connection she's had has been Fantastic Mr. Fox, Julie and Julia, and Lemony Snicket. That's it. And no, I have not shown her Doubt or Sophie's Choice yet. Get off my back. I'm better than that.
What else? Postcards from the Edge?
What?
Postcards
from the Edge? I'm not going to show her Postcards from the Edge. What's the matter with you? Jeez, I just showed her Jackie Chan. We'll get into that later. So, no, definitely worth buying, definitely worth checking out. Okay, we're going to move on to the Academy Award-winning portion. I know in Joe Shearer's world, it's not a good thing that Fantastic Mr. Fox has no awards, and this film has one.
Yes.
It's The Blind Side, featuring, come on, say it with me, Joe, Academy Award winner Sandra Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on a true story about a big black guy who needs a southern white woman to make things even better. And I pulled, that's Chris's a quotation that he put on my Facebook page.
Well, no, the variation I had was that every young black man to succeed in life needs a hot white mom.
Yeah.
Don't we all? Here's the trailer.
Up and at 'em. Sean Jr., you clean this room up before you come downstairs. You hear me?
Okay, big smile, Chewy family.
Let me get it, y'all.
Everyone, thank your mother for driving to the store and getting this.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Mama.
He's been enrolled in 7 different institutions, including a gap of 18 months around the age of 10, when he apparently didn't attend school at all.
I tell you, most kids with his background wouldn't come within 200 miles of this place.
Class, this is Mike Orr, and he's new here, so I expect you all to make him feel welcome.
Hi.
Smile at them and let them know you're their friend. I'm Sean.
Who is that, Esther?
Big Mike.
What is he wearing? It's below freezing.
Do you have any place to stay tonight? Don't you dare lie to me. Come on.
I had to stop it because I could see Joe's blood vessels in his forehead starts looking like Lewis Black on a rant there. Well, Joe, I'm gonna start with you. I'll let you say the quote because I remember you wrote this somewhere and you referred to Sandra Bullock winning Best Actress for The Blind Side as
I think I said the most unmerited Oscar since Crash.
Okay.
And actually, a local filmmaker, Gary Wood, actually called me to that and said, no, Crash is a good movie. No, it's not. And neither was this.
Wow.
And Sandra Bullock, coincidentally, was in both movies. So.
That's true. That is true. I'll say this is her best work.
Yeah.
Still not the best work.
Yeah. It was, and I don't hate her in particular, but nothing.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Your blood vessels,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no. It's just that nothing she did in this film was particularly unusual or outstanding.
It was her Aaron Brockovich kind of thing.
Yeah.
Tight white clothes and big hair.
Yeah, it was her Dangerous Minds Michelle Pfeiffer role. You know,
I'm sorry, you cannot compare Sandra Bullock to Michelle Pfeiffer. Get out of my show.
You know, like I said, there's nothing wrong with it in particular, but to me, the Best Picture nomination was what really, you know, tanned my hide.
Thank you for saying it. Thank you for phrasing it that way. Yeah, I wondered when they were expanded to 10, and we knew there was going to be a couple blockbusters in there, and when this became the surprise blockbuster of the year, you know, I remember there was early on talk about Sandra Goodie, and for a while we kind of just no, and it got to be October and November, we're the rest of the nominees, and sure enough. So, Chris, what are you on this one?
I'm not as down on the movie as Joe is,
or as I.
I like it. I think it's a good movie. It is definitely a situation where they've taken a true story and Hollywooded it.
Well, I no longer care if anything's based on a true story anymore. This show is based on a true story, so it just is. But
she is good in it. I didn't mind her getting the nomination. I would say that I thought pretty much any of the other four nominees were more deserving.
And Meryl Streep.
But especially Meryl Streep.
Especially.
And Gabori Sidibe probably would be my third choice. But I think she probably ended up winning because it was like she'd been in Hollywood for a long time.
It was the due. She was due.
Yeah, it really was the Julia Roberts thing where she'd been the popular America's sweetheart, and here she'd done something that was, for her, very different.
Right.
And she was really good doing it. So I didn't mind her getting the nomination, the win.
And this is a film that, and it's written and directed by John Lee Hancock. And this is, by the way, this is not even his best sports film. The Rookie. But there are times that it pulls your emotional heartstrings for the right reasons, and there are times that it pulls for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about, well, I guess this isn't the magical Negro. This is the magical white person film.
Yeah, it's the inverse of
the inverse of the magic Negro.
Yeah.
And we didn't create it. Stop sending notes to us about it.
Spike Lee created it.
Yeah. That's true. So there is that aspect that I will give the film credit that it does address the booster issues.
Yeah.
There is a part, there's about maybe 15 minutes near the end where the fact that the family and Kathy Bates, nice to see Kathy come off the bench, hit a couple threes, sit down. also, they're all Ole Miss people. And by the way, the whole recruiting thing, I love watching people who have no business acting trying to act, like Nick Saban and Lou Holtz.
Hi, I'm Lou Holtz from the University of South.
It wasn't quite Mantle and Maris bad, but
it was pretty bad.
It was close, but yeah, these guys can recruit, but they can't. They shouldn't be in front of them. They should have hired J.K. Simmons and some other character actors to come in and play those parts. But no, it's the South, and I understand they have to have their coaches. But anyway, good film, not great film, and thank you for not saying it's the worst win ever. Because, well, kids today, everything is the fill-in-the-blank ever.
Yeah.
Besides, we all know that's the greatest show on earth, or Elizabeth Taylor in Butterfield 8. Talk about a bad Best Actress performance. So, do we have a response on that?
Now that was a good movie.
Not great.
Not great.
Not Academy Award winning. Just good. Let's move on. A film that I think had a brief Oscar buzz for about 3 minutes and then died was Jim Sheridan's drama Brothers with Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal, Natalie Portman, and a war film that came out after Hurt Locker but wound up making more money than Hurt Locker, and that's not not really saying a whole heck of a lot. Apparently, I have to double check this. They think this is one of the bigger money making films about the war.
Yep.
Ooh, and I think it only made like 30. This wasn't that expensive a film. But anyway, listen to this.
Sam's dead.
What happens when you think your husband is gone?
Uncle Tommy,
wake up.
Our dad's dead. He knows. He's his brother.
I cut my throat to bring him back, Dad.
And you begin to put your life together again.
Hello?
But you were wrong about one thing.
I want to talk to my wife.
Daddy! Thanks for taking care of her. Did you sleep with her?
What happened with you and Tommy?
I thought you were dead.
I just want to be able to come over and see the girls. What's wrong? Stop it.
You're just mad your mom would rather sleep with her than Tommy to you.
Isabel!
And the kids, they all tucked in.
You know what I did?
Yeah.
You know how much I love you?
Brothers, rated R, in theaters everywhere December 4th.
Well, And I think, like I say, I thought Brothers was a good film. The acting is pretty solid for all three. And I love cinematic gene pools. The parents are Mare Winningham and Sam Shepard.
Yep.
Interesting. But I think the film, for me, has, it's just, it suffered from bad timing.
Yeah.
The fact that this came after Hurt Locker. And I think we had, because I think we've, the three of us, we've seen most of the Iraq or war in Afghanistan, war in the Middle East films that have come out in the last few years. And some hit you over the head harder than others. And the fact that...
Rezo.
Thank you. Wow.
I still got a lump from it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last 20 minutes probably, yeah, they do hit pretty hard. But, so the problem, and this film doesn't hit it hard that bad. I guess it's the more of War at Home kind of story, but the fact that Hurt Locker was so good and the fact that we had to see another one, I think it's just bad timing on it. Maybe more time has passed now that it's on DVD. And I like the fact that Jim Sheridan's now working with somebody other than 50 Cent. Remember, get rich or die trying?
Yeah.
Whew, so.
Yeah, it's a decent movie. It's one of the weaker Jim Sheridan movies, I would say.
Yeah, because Sheridan's got a great track record.
Particularly, he's one of these directors that is just has a wonderful touch with actors.
Yeah.
And virtually any actor that you see in one of his movies will typically give one of the better performances of their career.
And technically you're right, because I guess Get Rich or Die Tryin' is the greatest performance by 50 Cent. If you've seen his filmography, you'll know what I mean.
Tobey Maguire gives a really strong performance in this. Jake Gyllenhaal and Natalie Portman good as well. There's a child actor, I can't remember her name, who plays the eldest daughter,
yeah,
who is just fantastic.
Really good, and yeah, the scene at the birthday party is...
Oh, yeah, so emotional and raw and just right there.
Yeah.
But it's one of those movies that it suffers a little bit from, you know, it's not a plot-driven movie, but the plot, you know, the basic setup is that he comes home after being declared dead, and the idea is that they never found a body, but they immediately declare him dead, which... You know,
yeah,
for anybody who knows anything about the American military, I mean, there are literally, you know...
They at least send Chuck Norris.
Right. But, I mean, there are literally soldiers from the Korean War who are still listed as MIA, not KIA. So the idea that with no body, they would immediately declare him dead...
Yeah.
It stretches. And the other aspect is he comes home and accuses the brother of having...
Immediately.
And the thing is, no one actually just will come out and say, no, it didn't happen. It's all this hemming and hawing and looking the other way and great acting moments, but you're just like, why wouldn't you just say, no, that didn't happen?
Because then the film is an hour.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a scene that, and I guess maybe that's what we're supposed to talk about when we go home, is there is a scene with Gyllenhaal and Portman, and it's brief, and it's not quite what you think, and it's an emotional moment, and but then we don't get to see Tobey Maguire destroy a kitchen. That takes some prowess. Anyway, so, yeah, overall, bad timing, but...
Good movie!
And finally, and this is probably the most disappointing of the lot, but we'll play it anyway. It's a trailer for Here's the Men Who Stare at Goats with all these people. Give it a listen.
My name is Bob Wilton. I'm a journalist. I've been investigating a story about a classified government program.
So what you're saying is that you were a psychic spy.
A Jedi warrior.
I'd heard that the U.S. government was training psychic soldiers, and that Lynn Cassidy was the best of the best.
I've been reactivated. I'm on a mission.
I could come. Lynn's story was unbelievable, crazy, and completely true.
You have to dream a new America that no longer has an exploitative view of everyone.
You will be a psychic weapon.
Feel it, yeah! You must create warrior monks who can pass through walls and see into the future.
Congratulations, Scotty. Sorry it doesn't work out between you two.
What are you doing?
Cloud bursting. Keeps me in shape. And it's gone.
Geez, you had like the whole desert to drive inland.
Please, please.
Thank you for picking us up.
How are we going to stop them?
They've got guns.
We're Jedi. We don't fight with guns, we fight with our minds.
Holy.
I went looking for a story.
and my friend Lynn brought me an adventure.
It's okay, we're Americans. We're here to help you.
What happened?
I think I just ran him over.
Oh, crap.
Lieutenant Colonel Django used funds from the project's black budget to procure prostitutes.
That's a lie.
And to get drugs for himself and his men.
That... Well, the hooker thing is definitely a lie.
Okay, Jeff Bridges, George Clooney, Kevin Spacey, Ewan McGregor, and as it says on the video box, GOAT. It looks like a Coen Brothers film. It acts like a Coen Brothers film. It's not a Coen Brothers film. And I think part of the problem is the film's tone. There are times where it is Coen-esque, and there are times where it could have been. It just becomes a little more military serious than it really should. The ending is probably my favorite, and it involves drugs and goats, and no, not that. But I'm sure everybody on this film had fun, and I took my variation of a quote. Gene Siskel once said, if a film of two actors having lunch is better than the film they make, you're in trouble. Well, I take that a step further, and I think certain DVDs should have the rap party with their cast. I would love to see a rap party with this cast. I would love to see these guys just loose and fancy free. It's just okay. I think probably it's just unstable when it comes to tone. And it's a shame, especially when you have a cast this big and at times that goofy. You could either make it a complete military goofy drama, a goofy comedy, or some military satire. And it just kind of meshes and doesn't quite gel all the way. So
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
All right. You know what? I think we're going to skip the break because we got less than 10 minutes. And there's a couple things we need to bring up here at Film Sociology. Do we do the actor or do we do the show first that died?
How about the actor?
All right. So we say salute to Robert Culp, who first thing out of Joe's mouth is Great American Hero. What the hell is wrong with you? My God.
I'm a child of the 80s. I'm sorry.
So was I, but I saw I Spy. What's your excuse?
I was too busy watching The Greatest American Hero. Watching William in tights. So.
You're walking on air, criminy. So, but yeah, did of course, yeah, he was the white guy in I Spy, and was and most recently, I think people knew he was in Everybody Loves Raymond for many episodes. And I'm going through his obit. You know, the film career. You know, his highlight was Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. And kudos, because he got two scenes with Natalie Wood and Diane Cannon in 1969. That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
Cary Grant, you lucky dog. but looking through the other films that they mentioned in his obit, Castaway Cowboy, which I never saw, Golden Girl, I have a soft spot for Susan Anton, Turk 182, and Big Bad Mama 2. Wow. So there you go on that. The other thing he was also in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
Nice. I have that at home. I got to watch that.
Do you really?
I absolutely do. Yeah.
Do you? I can't believe I'm asking this. Joe Shearer, do you own the Silent Night, Deadly Night box set?
It is. It was, you know, I'm not going to say I paid money for it, but I do have it at home.
Oh, thank
it arrived
God.
At my house. I believe it's 2, 3, 4 or 3, 4, 5.
Oh, there's like the makers of one are holding out their cold
yeah,
dead hands for that
yeah.
money.
Too much controversy and money to be made somewhere
wow.
down the road.
Wow. The other thing I forgot about, and I had to do the research on this, he was a 3-time killer on Columbo.
Wow.
I love Columbo. And so he ties with Jack Cassidy, who's also best known as for just doing Columbo, and Shirley Jones. But Patrick McGoohan was the 4-timer. So, and I remember seeing in college, they showed it Monday through Friday. They showed reruns of it. And I remember one week they showed one with Culp, and then the next week they showed like one of the other two. And I went, what kind of legal system does California have? They keep letting Robert Culp out. He keeps killing people. My God. So anyway, salute to Robert Culp. And a show that I think all three of us watched when we were kids, products of the 80s, when you weren't watching Great American Hero.
Oh, yeah.
But a film show that really kind of helped
us.
Launch us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So take that for what it's worth. But At the Movies is now officially no more.
Yeah, I can say without any equivocation that, you know, watching this show made me want to write about movies for a career. And it really didn't occur to me, even though I watched the show and I was a movie nut, Probably until I was into college, probably my freshman year, and I was like, well, why don't I do that? I could be Siskel or Ebert because they're getting old. I could replace one of them. Fortunately,
we all had that fantasy. Oh, and of course, then one of them died and the other got sick, and now we feel bad.
And unfortunately, I don't want to be mean here, but for me, this show really, a part of it died with Gene, just because what made that show not just good but great was their relationship, their repartee,
their
love-hate back and forth.
And they've been doing it for years. I'm going to be the hipster douchebag because I actually remember sneak previews when Channel 20 in Flint would show it. And, I remember when they – could you imagine that? A PBS show going national, getting syndicated? So that was quite a bit. So, yeah, and fortunately, I think YouTube still has a slew of the old reviews. I just watched recently because The Onion had written about I think it's called Scene Specific, but they talked about the opening scene in The Color of Money, and they talked about how both of them didn't like the film. I was like, I don't remember that. So I went and put it on there, and yep, there they are. I know David Lynch used his review of Blue Velvet, their review of Blue Velvet in the DVD's special features.
Excellent.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think you're right, Chris. I think when Gene went, a big chunk of that show went with him. And this is not, I mean, and kudos to Ebert, because, I mean, the guy's got half a jaw, and he's still writing, and apparently he has a voice again, and hopefully developing a new show.
Yeah.
Call us.
Yeah. Well, a little bit of update. After it was officially announced, Roger Ebert posted something on his blog that said they are moving forward with plans for their own show. They've already auditioned people, and they've selected their two. They know it's going to be two critics. I would, if I was a betting man, I would probably say, what's the gal from Entertainment
Cat
Weekly?
Cat Sadler. No, I'm kidding. Mary Hart?
No, from Entertainment Weekly. What's they have Owen Gleiberman and
Linda Schwartzbaum.
What's the Associated Press critic? Not David Germain. What's the other one? Christy LeMire.
Okay.
I think it's probably going to be Christy LeMire.
Huh.
Or it might be two women. But all I can say is I'm looking forward to it. It has to be better than the infamous Two Bands.
Oh, that was so bad. That was. Yeah. I mean, and talk about a screw job on Ebert. The guy laid a foundation, and you think with a Pulitzer, they treat you with a little bit more respect.
Yeah.
But at least it's got the copyright.
Right. Yeah. But now, you know, then they went the other way with A.O. Scott and Michael Phillips, you know, very respected guys, and it just didn't.
Well, part of it is they had it out at 2:00 in the morning on Sunday.
Well, that's a franchise thing. You know, they franchise it out to each city, and then they decide when they're going to run it on their weekend schedule.
Right. And The Onion actually wrote, like, a week before this was announced, one of their writers was praising that combination of At the Movies. So.
Yeah.
All right, TV, let us.
And the thumbs are back, too. So.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do those here because I don't want to send Ebert a check every. I've had people do. Do you have that? Did they come up to you and when they ask you for your opinion, do you go? They ask you thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah.
I say heck no.
Roger's going to sue me.
Yeah, I don't want to get sued by him. I already corrected him on one of his film rules once. I don't want him to come back at me with a vengeance.
Yeah.
He'll mess you up. So.
So and there's a possibility actually that Roger will actually make some appearances on the new show in limited, maybe like a DVD review, something that he can record using his new voice simulator, which is awesome.
That would be cool. It would be nice. Yeah. So, and by the way, if you haven't read the article on Esquire, do so.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Fantastic.
We got about a minute. I noticed, Chris, on the Film Yab, at least on Facebook, you talk about Little Big Man.
Yeah, you know, I do the reeling backward look at a classical film twice a week, one on Monday, one on Friday. Today's is Little Big Man, 1970.
1970, yeah.
Is it a Western? Is it an anti-Western? Is it a satire of a Western? All I know is I love it with Dustin Hoffman.
In old age makeup.
In great old age makeup. Uh-huh. It's great even back then. And if you watch it, people say it's Dances with Wolves before Dances with Wolves.
Or it's Dances in Da Nang with Ho Chi Minh. I don't know.
But great, great movie about a guy who, you know, had one foot in the white man's world and one foot in the, I believe it was the Cherokee tribe. And just a great movie with a lot of fun, but also a lot of, you know, some sad moments, some startling violence.
And it's Arthur Penn. Arthur Penn directed that. So.
I hate to say it, this was sort of the end of his... He had a very short but very fertile great period, and unfortunately this more or less marked the end of it.
You should rent Night Moves again.
Oh.
There you go.
Been a while.
Been a while. 75. There's another feature I'll tell you about off air. I can't tell you right now. So, all right, ready? Hit. Let's words to live by.
Zardoz has spoken.
Christopher Lloyd, Joy Shearer of the Building the App. Thank you guys so much for sitting in.
Our pleasure.
Ryan, thanks for working the board. No thanks to Emma. She's gone. Peace. Until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org. Happy birthday, Nuvo. I'll be with you in just a minute.